I really wanted to preach the Thanksgiving message. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I had something all picked out, and I was like, this is Sunday after Thanksgiving. I didn't preach Thanksgiving messages to the teens. I didn't teach Sunday school this morning. I was like, really looking forward to preaching a Thanksgiving message tonight. So much so, I had a message almost all the way prepared. And Friday morning, my wife went shopping, Black Friday shopping with my sisters, and I went to study. And the Lord's like, no, you're not going to do that. And I was like, are you sure? And he's like, I'm sure. And so we got changed around a little bit. So we're going to be back in 1 Samuel, like I said this morning. 1 Samuel in chapter 27, if you could stand with me in the reading of God's word. 1 Samuel chapter 27. It's not a long chapter, so we're going to read the whole thing. We're going to be beginning in verse 1, 1 Samuel 27, verse 1. And David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than that I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines. And Saul shall despair of me to seek me any more in any coast of Israel. So shall I escape out of his hand. And David arose, and he passed over with 600 men that were with him into Achish, the son of Maok, king of Gath. David dwelt with Achish at Gath, he and his men, every man with his household, even David with his two wives, Hinnom and Jezreelitess, and Abigail the Carmelitess, Nabal's wife. And it was told to Saul that David was fled to Gath, and he sought no more again for him. And David said unto Achish, if I have now found grace in thine eyes, let them give me a place in some town in the country, that I may dwell there. For why should thy servant dwell in the royal city with thee? Then Achish gave him Ziklag that day. Wherefore Ziklag pertaineth unto the kings of Judah unto this day. And the time that David dwelt in the country of the Philistines was a full year and 4 months. And David said, And David and his men went up and invaded the Jeshurites and the Gerzites and the Amalekites, for those nations were of old the inhabitants of the land, as thou goest to Shur, even unto the land of Egypt. And David smote the land, and left neither man nor woman alive, and took away the sheep and the oxen and the asses and the camels and the apparel, and returned and came to Achish. And Achish said, Whither have ye made a road today? And David said, Against the south of Judah, and against the south of the Jermalites. I practiced that, I promise. And against the south of the Kenites. And David saved neither man nor woman alive to bring tidings to Gath, saying, Lest they should tell on us, saying, So did David, and so will be this his manner all the while he dwelt in the country of the Philistines. And Achish believed David, saying, He hath made his people Israel utterly to abhor him. Therefore, he shall be my servant forever. You may be seated. So tonight we're going back to the 1 Samuel. And if you would think of what just happened in 26, we talked about it this morning. Saul started chasing him once again. And David sent spies out to see if Saul was there. David creeps into the camp, has an opportunity to kill Saul, but says, no, God has told me not to. I need to obey what God has said and not touch the Lord's anointed. And we talked about this morning that David didn't have to be omniscient to be obedient. And he was obedient even to, though Abishai thought it was a good idea. And even Abishai tried to convince him that it was of God and all these things. And David's like, no, I know God will take care of Saul in his timing. And I just need to obey what God has showed me. So when we come to a passage like this, at least me personally, I would think, you know, oh, David's going to take the next step. Next step in obedience, figure out where God wants him to go. Seek the Lord, let him move him where he wants him to go. And whether it's to fight an enemy or to go to another land safe. And he doesn't do that. I thought we would think he would stay on track. And sometimes we can give a hard time to David here. And sometimes we're confused about why David would be off track like this. But there's a couple things in this passage I think we can all learn from David here tonight. And the title of the message tonight is Feelings Over Faith. And something that can happen to a lot of believers. if we're honest with ourselves. Because this happens to us even in school. And I'm not talking about feelings over faith. If you're living on faith to pass your test, you're probably not going to pass your test, teenagers, just so we're all aware. But we can have quizzes and tests throughout the year, and we know the material, and they test us on it, and we get good grades. We get 90s and 95s and 100s all throughout the year on certain material. It just makes sense to us, and we make that, complete it and complete it successfully. And then the final comes. And that same section that you got 100% on, we'll just say chapter 2 of your science book that you've got 100% on for the entire semester, you completely bomb on the final. Well, did you not know the material? Well, you did. Sometimes, though, we get distracted, and sometimes we can get a bad grade on a final because we forget what we know. We forget what we've already accomplished and how we accomplished it. Unfortunately, this is not 4 squared plus 3 squared. This is the lives and direction of David's life and men, and it's going to start leading them down the wrong road. So King David in our passage is going to go, go back to Gath. So if we remember, if you know 1 Samuel, how it's laid out a little bit, back in chapter 21, the end of 21, when Saul was chasing him from Nob, David goes to Gath to escape Saul a different time. He goes to King of Gath, and King of Gath sees him coming, but David has to act like a madman to get out of there. He has drool coming down his beard, scratching at the walls, acting like a crazy man just to get out of Gath to not look suspicious. So I don't know if the king kind of forgot that David was supposed to be a crazy guy, or if he knew he was just acting crazy to get out of there. Either way, he has run to Gath before. He's had this interaction and followed his own heart to Gath, the Philistine country. But why would he do this? Why is David making this what would kind of seem like a dramatic left turn after just saying how he needs to follow after God, how he needs to obey God what he has and not kill Saul? And so I need to, the next action is go to the God's enemies, to the very people that God was going to send the Israelites to destroy. What happened? Well, verse 1 helps us out quite a bit, actually. And David said in his heart, "I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than that I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines. And Saul shall despair of me to seek me any more in any coast of Israel. So shall I escape out of his hand." David starts to look inward. Sometimes we're not super clear on how much time's passed between chapters, but there's enough doubts creeped in his life, enough a little bit of self-centered pity party going on. David just starts looking inward. Instead of going, "God, I'm struggling. God, I'm having a hard time. God, I don't know how to take this next step. I don't know what you expect of me. I don't know how this is supposed to go." He just starts realizing, he starts looking at his circumstances. Instead of looking upward, he's looking outward. And he starts looking at what's around him and the hopelessness of his situation. Or so he thinks. He thinks to himself, "Man, there's no way I'm going to escape Saul. There's no way that he's ever going to give up following me. The only logical next step is to go to the Philistine country." He doesn't think about God, and he doesn't think about what God would want for his life. He just thinks of the next human reasoning uses human reasoning of where to go next. And David goes down to Gath and hides. He doesn't ask for counsel or guidance. Instead of talking to God and saying he was struggling, he just went. David started fearing men more than trusting in God. See, David stopped being led by God in this chapter. And because he let his human reason take, and because of this, he let his, and in doing this, by stop being led by God, he started letting his human reasoning take control and let that be his guide. And this would go lead him to a place that he doesn't talk to God for a very long time. We're going to talk about that here in a second. But David's choices, though they seemed what if we take a out snapshot of his life, it's like, oh, that kind of makes sense. If we subtract that God is gonna not would not if we didn't know the Philistines were David's enemies, if we didn't know that God specifically had a plan for David, if we didn't know the if we just subtracted everything we know about David right now, and we saw a guy getting chased by another guy go to a city where he knows that guy is not going to chase him, that king's not going to chase him, well, of course, you'd go there. You'd try to escape and save your life. But there's some details that matter, some details that are going to affect David in his life. And sometimes it looks like our personal plans, our own reasoning works sometimes. And that's kind of what David probably thought at first. He runs to Gath. Saul does stop chasing him. And in verse 4 it says, "And it was told Saul that David was fled to Gath, and he sought no more again for him." So it worked, right? It Saul stopped chasing David. David probably thought, you know, this is good. I'm gonna work this out just fine and accomplish what I wanted to do. I got Saul to stop following me. But just because something seems to work out does not mean that it was God's will for our life. Because we're going to see David doesn't talk to God for over a year and 4 months. No communication whatsoever. Not that's recorded, and there's a specific timeline. The reason, there's a specific reason we're given a year and 4 months. Because we see David talk to God. In earlier chapters, they communicated with God in the cave and was convicted by God not to kill Saul. But then we see David stop talking to God when he chooses to let despair take over his heart and let his own reasoning be his guide. And he won't talk to God for at least a year and 4 months. But for now, it works. Or so he thinks. And he goes to Achish and he said, "Achish, I don't want to dwell in the capital city," basically, is what he's trying to get across to Achish here in our passage. He said, "Just give me a town. I just want to be your servant." Things he knows he should not be telling the enemy of God. But nonetheless, he is. All the while, he's going against what God's plan would be for his life. The things he knew. If we think about it in terms like that of, there's things we know to do in the Christian life. We know that we should read our Bible, we should pray, you know, that we should tithe, we should, you know, be involved in our local church, we should be witnessing to others. Those are things we know. This would be one of the things David should know. He should never go to the enemies of God, the very enemies God told him to kick out of the land, told the children of Israel once they crossed the Jordan to kick out of the land. They already didn't do that whenever they're being led by Joshua. But now David, knowing the law, knowing what God had expected of him, went directly to those people that he should have been enemies with in the first place and is asking for their help and basically serving them, or so he says. But while he's so King Achish is like, "Oh yeah, that's awesome. We'll be friends. You go down to Ziklag. I'll give you Ziklag and it'll be fine. It'll be great. You're going to have a good time down there. You'll have a good time." And David's like, "Perfect." But when David goes down there, he's not actually helping Achish. He goes and raids all the allies of the king of Gath, the Philistines' allies, the Gershites and the Jezreelites and the Amalekites. And he goes and he takes their land. He takes all their sheep, their clothes, their camels, all their livestock. He takes them in for himself, because his men need substance. They need substance and food and clothing to make it through. And so David gets all that he needs, but along the way he makes sure to kill everybody in each town completely, to make sure it doesn't get back to the Philistine king that David's doing this, that he's attacking their allies, that he's making waste to the people that would be helping the Philistines. Instead, he lies and says, "Oh, I've been attacking South Judah and all Israel's allies over here." He tells tells him he's in a completely different spot than he actually is and doing completely different actions that he was actually doing. And this would come to cost David later on, but David right here is slowly in a little bit of a spiral. It's a little bit of a spiral of doing things his way. And this through this whole year. So this wasn't just like, oh, this is a week where he served King Achish and then he lied to him and he attacked this random town and then just lied to him one time. And then we're going to get to chapter 28 and 29 with Saul and then get chapter 30 where David, you know, makes everything right. No, this was a year and 4 months. This man was drifting away from God this entire time. And we would come to find out later that, that Achish believed him. We can see at our end of our passage, and it says, "And Achish believed David, saying, he hath made his people to Israel to utterly to abhor him. Therefore, he shall be my servant forever." So King Achish is like, perfect. This is exactly what I wanted to happen. Because if we look back at David's life, he's actually a pretty good fighter. He's has a pretty good record. One, but the real reason is because God's on his side. But also, God had gifted him in apparently a tactical mind because he would slay Goliath, yes, and that was a miracle of God. But he also would use David to slay Philistines and a lot of them because they would sing the praises of Saul that Saul had killed his thousands and David his 10,000s back in, I believe it's 1 Samuel 19. Or 18, right around that area. And they were singing the praises of David, and that's a lot of Philistines. And in a short amount of time. So David obviously had some military prowess to know how to attack people and how to use his military expertise in an efficient way. So Achish is probably thinking, awesome, so I've got this soon was supposed to be the king of Israel. Now he's on my side. He knows how to command a military force, and now he's attacking his own people. This is perfect. He's going to serve me forever, and I'm going to be able to use him to attack the Israelites because he's clearly ready to get rid of them and ready to be against them as much as possible. So he's got Achish fooled, but he doesn't have God fooled. And God's going to work on his heart later. But right here, we can just see, as we see David in this chapter, we can see him lose faith because he started to worry about his circumstances more than focusing on God. David lost sight of God's promise because of his current circumstance. And it took his focus off of God, what he had done, to the hopelessness of his circumstance. Because of this, he let himself drift away in seeking after follow God. Because we just talked about, and this morning, this very morning, in chapter 26, that David was said, God will take care of Saul. Whether he die of old age, whether he die in battle, or whether if the Lord smite him. He had that faith of God was going to protect him and deal with Saul in the right way. What happened? Why did he lose this unwavering faith, it seemed like, this unwavering ability to trust God even when he was at his last straw, when he even had the opportunity as well to take this man Saul's life that would make everything so much simpler, so much easier to deal with. And then he ends up in chapter 27 going to the enemy of God to get away from Saul and thinking in himself, there's no other way this could be accomplished. This is the same David that had seen Goliath fall, the same David that had killed 10,000s of Philistines, that God had protected from a javelin throw from Saul multiple times, but then all of a sudden loses faith. And before we're too hard on David in our passage this evening, when we're wondering, we can be hard on David and we can say, what were you thinking, David? What were you doing? You just trust God. You know that. We got to remember we're just as prone to wandering and to lose our focus because it can happen to us in a moment. It's not that God is any less God on any given day. It's not that God has left our side on any given day. It's rather our focus changes. I almost thought about titling this switch of focus, but I think feelings over faith fit a little bit better. Because sometimes that's what really gets in our way, doesn't it? Is our feelings. And not that to say that there won't be struggles in the feelings, because feelings are a part of our human being. That's how God created us. It's not the feelings that are always wrong. Our heart lies to us, but our feelings, we can get frustrated. We can get upset. We can get scared. It's when we let our feelings control us that it becomes a problem. When we let our focus go from upward to God to outward to the world around us that is bearing down on us, we tend to start trying to do things in our own strength, using our own reasoning to lead us, and that leading will always lead us away from God every time, because our hearts are desperately wicked. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 says this: trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. And Jeremiah 17:9 says, the heart is deceitful above all things, and desperately wicked, who can know it? See, God's word is clear. It's our flesh is desperately wicked. It's wicked. We need God to be leading our path. But the problem is the circumstance can start bearing down on us, and it'll make us lose our focus. So we can be asking God, be like, where to go, what to do, how you want us to live. And we say, God, I know you want me to do this. God, I know you don't want me to do this. But then that circumstance comes, that struggle comes, that financial hardship comes that you weren't expecting, that health emergency pops up, or the friend you thought was so close stops being so close, or starts talking behind your back, or you fill in the blank. And we're tempted, and we can start trying to use our own human reasoning and to let our feelings take our focus off of God. But when we do that, we'll lead to a lack of fellowship with God, like it did David. We will all be tempted to fix our own circumstances our way instead of trusting God in faith. But when those times come, we need to remember David here. Remember that we see what we can learn from David in his mistake. We saw David go from looking upward to outward, and we saw David start to look at his circumstance, and because of that, his heart led him astray, and he didn't talk to God for a year and 4 months at least. And because of that, it would lead him to almost lead him to kill his own countrymen unless God intervened. It would cause his families to be kidnapped, and it would cause David to have to go fight another battle that he should never have had to fight in the first place if he would have been where God wanted him to be. And as he lost his perspective, he would be even threatened by his own men to be stoned and killed. These are all consequences because David tried to do things his way. And there's always negative consequences when we try to do life our way instead of God's way. And I'm not talking about necessarily, when I say rely on our human reasoning, and I kind of mentioned this morning, stole some of my notes from this morning for this morning's message as well. But when we talk about human reasoning, we're not talking about what we like or we dislike. It's not talking about our own human reasoning when we like chocolate ice cream or strawberry ice cream. I'm not talking about whether you like ham or turkey for Thanksgiving or if mashed potatoes or rolls are better. It's not that kind of human reasoning. I'm talking about when big things come in your life, whether it's struggles, whether it's trials, whether it's opportunities. Are we keeping our focus on God and what He would have for us? Are we keeping our decision-making in the hands of God? Or are we starting to look outward instead of upward? These choices will have an impact on our life and on our future, on our kids' future, on our future, our spiritual well-being. And unless we're very careful, and unless we acknowledge the fact that our hearts are desperately wicked, and that our heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked, like it says in Jeremiah, we're gonna mess it up. The phrase is getting up all in your feels when somebody starts getting a little dramatic. But if we start letting our feelings be the forefront of decision making, when we let our frustration or our fear or our sadness or our anxiety or our anger start letting us make the decisions for us, we're going to miss it. We're going to miss God's will for our life. We're going to miss the opportunity God has for us. And we're going to get away from God and drift away. And then you're wondering, why don't I feel as close to God? Why do I not hear God's voice as much as I used to? Why do I not see Him working in my life anymore? Why am I not seeing Him direct me like He used to? Well, we need to do a heart check. When's the last time you've let Him make a decision in your life? When's the last time you went and sought Him to know the right next way, the right next step to go in your life? Contrast Jeremiah 17:9 with James 1:5. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. See, all David had to do in this moment, when he started to let this despair set in, whenever he started letting the fear set in, whenever he started to see this overwhelming circumstance he saw in his life and he didn't know how to handle, and he saw Saul that continued to chase him, even though he said back in chapter 24 that he would stop chasing him. He's chasing him here again. What shall I do? Instead of saying, God, I'm afraid. God, I'm struggling. God, I need your help here. I don't know where to go next. God, I need your guidance. Because James 1:5 makes it clear to us, if any of you lack wisdom or direction, wisdom, that the knowing to do the right next step, how to handle a situation, wisdom, the, you know, that Proverbs thing, the whole book of Proverbs is full of, the wisdom that God has for us that we just need to ask for is available to all of us, and He's going to give it to us liberally, not a little bit, not like have a little bit of water in here, like liberally as in like a fountain spewing out, trying to fill us with wisdom as long as we let it. It shall be given unto him, James 1:5 says. Because God promises to never leave us and nor forsake us. And God has a plan for each and everybody's life. And he had a plan for David's life. And David, instead of saying, God, I need your help. God, I need your direction. God, I need your will to be done in my life. He let himself be guided by his emotions, by his fear, by his despair. I read a quote that said, the most miserable man on earth is not an unsaved man. The most miserable man on earth is the saved man out of fellowship with Christ. And in this time, though it doesn't say that, you know, David despaired once he attacked the enemy and over that 1 year and 4 months, you know that he wasn't happy. And his men were sure not as happy as they could have been, because the moment one thing went wrong, they wanted to stone him. Once the wives and children were taken by the enemy, they're like, all right, David, you're dead now. They were already in a place of not receiving God's counsel and guidance and peace and love. They were out of God's will because they stopped David, all because David stopped looking upwards and started looking outwards. And we gotta make sure as parents, I know I'm not a parent yet, but I work with the teens a lot, and so I have a little bit of influence on them. And if they blame me for anything, it's probably, I probably did something to make me, now Mark has it all on his own. He does his own thing. I was going to take responsibility for some knuckleheaded things, but I don't know that. I think he's good. But we, as parents, you have influence on your kids, because the choices you make, if they're made out of fear, or lack of faith, or anger, or simply just selfishness, and instead of being led by God, you can have an effect on your kids that is not going to be positive, but rather negative. Something completely opposite of what you'd want to happen. Same goes with spiritual leadership. Even older people in the church that would have influence on the younger generation, if you make choices that aren't led by God, you can have negative effects on the next generation. And I don't think anybody wants that here. I don't think anybody wants to say, oh, I want to lead as many people as I can astray or hurt as many people by my actions as possible. No, I think we all want to push others towards God, push others to right living, push others to what God would expect of their life as well as their own. And we read through Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. It lays it out clearly. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him and he shall direct thy paths. See, David stopped letting God direct his path. He stopped making God his focus and started more worried about the circumstances around him. It wasn't that David turned into this terrible sinner, that he would had nothing to do with God. That's not what happened. He simply stopped making decisions to follow God, He failed to let God make the decisions of his next step. He stopped letting God influence his life, but rather took matters into his own hands and missed out on fellowship with God for at least a year and 4 months. It happens with kids a lot, doesn't it? They want to pour the milk themselves. And instead of letting you help, and they try to do it all themselves and milk goes everywhere. Well, if they would have just let you help them and let you put their hand around them and pour into the cup and let it fill up, and they would have all the milk they wanted. Instead, they made a mess and they missed out on our opportunity to get the milk that they actually wanted. You know, they made a mess. And I say that because I did that a lot as a kid. I tried to do it myself. I was the older brother. I tried to, you know, try to be quote unquote helpful. I made so many eggs that I burned and gave them my mom for breakfast in the morning. It's not even funny. But I'd also try to pour milk myself when I was really little. I was like, no, mom, I got it. Instead of letting my mom come and help me, because she knew how to pour milk, right? She knows how to not spill. She knows how it's supposed to go. I was like, I can do it myself. I don't need your help. And then made a mess. It's the same thing we're doing with God in our lives. When we let our steps be guided by our own feelings, our own way, we're saying, God, no. No, you don't know what you're doing. God, I got this myself. I'm a big kid. I can pour the milk myself and I can get the blessings I want without your help at all. It ends up in a mess more often times than it doesn't. And more often, and especially in the Christian life, it always ends up in a mess because every good gift and every perfect gift come from above. So we can't do it and get that blessing on our own. We can't make it happen on our own. And let's learn from David and make sure we do not let our emotions guide us, but that we let the God of the universe, the one who saved our souls, be our guide because he knows what is best. But to do that, we can't lean on how we feel. And it's going to be hard. Don't get me wrong. Emotions can run high. You know, you can get a little bit frustrated with your life circumstances on why you're not this far down the road or why you haven't finished paying this off or haven't been able to have this health thing resolved. Emotions can be there, but our focus needs to make sure remains on God and make sure we keep them in check. Because we can't lean on how we feel. We have to lean on the God of the universe. You can have every head bowed and stand to our feet if you're willing and able and just respond to God's word as the pianist comes tonight. I know there's a lot that can happen, and I know we're at the holidays and we're supposed to be thankful. Like I said, I tried to do a Thanksgiving message this evening. But God is always in control, and we can be thankful for that. We can be thankful that God knows the next step for us. But that only comes if we truly submit to him and don't let our focus leave upward and go outward, but rather leave the outward focus and put it upward and focus on God.